Saturday, July 25th, 2015. Lads playing basketball. A rider doing a wheelie on a dirt bike. An ordinary summer weekend in America. But by midnight on Sunday, CCTV footage of a man firing a handgun. Hundreds of lives will have been devastated by gun violence. Stop fire. 197 people injured, 87 dead. One deadly weekend in America. Los Angeles, California. Saturday evening.
The LAPD is on heightened alert following a series of shootings.
Witnesses say that a gunman shot a man inside a car at the corner of 81st and Hoover. This was about 4 o'clock this afternoon.
It's unclear if the shootings have anything to do with social media posts about a gang promising 100 days of violence as revenge for the murder of one of its members.
Yeah. Hashtag 100 days, hashtag 100 nights. It's really war going on outside. Hashtag pray for LA. 9:40 p.m.
An explosion of violence in South Los Angeles has residents there on edge tonight.
The latest happened at 48th and Budlong Avenue in Vermont Square Park.
We heard the pops. We were in our house. We waited. I heard more, and I realized they weren't fireworks. I went out just to right here, and our neighbors to the right of us were outside and yelling at us to get back in the house. I went back and got my partner and told him to grab some shirts. I grabbed some gauze. Then we headed towards the park. We could see a couple people that were still over there that were hurt, and then somebody laying on the floor. He'd been shot several times. He was laying in a pool of blood. We ran out of gauze really quickly. He was bleeding so much. There was so much blood. There was so much blood.
Vermont Square resident Jay. Blood-soaked clothing on the ground. 10 p.m. Steve, photojournalist.
I was actually at another shooting not too far from here and heard the dispatch for this one. So we came over, set up my camera right about here. Pretty much right about here, I started filming the scene. Right over where all the benches are, right underneath the awning over here, noticed we had 3 victims suffering gunshot wounds.
Casualties being treated at the scene.
No idea who the shooters were or what the actual motive was. They were calling it 100 dead in 100 days. It was a free-for-all.
A casualty being taken away.
I think they called for it. We did.
The U.S. gun homicide rate is 20 times higher than that of our 22 peer nations. 86 people die every day from guns. That's 4 Sandy Hooks, 10 Charlestons. Every day.
A slow-moving boat. CCTV footage of a shirtless man in a baseball cap sitting in an interview room. Another man enters. St. Louis, Missouri.
What's your last name?
Kovac.
Kovac asks, is the man okay? The other man says, I don't know yet. I don't want to hide anything from you. If you answer questions now without a lawyer present, you still have the right to stop answering any time. Kovac says, no, I want to tell you everything. I shot him. He was threatening my family. I was terrified for my kids. It was just instinct. I grabbed that pistol. The guy goes mad. I'm gonna fucking kill you, motherfucker. My kids started screaming and crying. He came at me. I would say he made it 2 steps.
Two steps? Yeah, a few steps.
I squeeze the trigger.
911, location of your emergency.
Rockford Beach. Someone just got shot. They're screaming. They're all fighting. There's a whole bunch of kids.
Okay, listen to me. The person who shot the subject, where is he?
He's in a white suburban. They were threatening him, and he turned around and shot them. He's got six kids in his car with them.
Okay, we've got help on the way, okay?
Guy that's laying on the ground that looks like he's dead.
Patrick Marchlewski's ID. Jeff's scrolling through photographs on his phone. His brother is with him.
He was my best friend. This is one of me and him. He's kissing me. This is one of him just being his usual goofy self.
Do you call him Patrick or Pat?
Trouble.
Okay.
Pat went by Trouble. I don't know. It was just kind of a nickname, and it stuck.
Trouble in a good way, though.
Right, yeah.
He's never trouble in a bad way. I mean, he's got a history. Everybody's got a history, but definitely wasn't a troublemaker.
These are, actually, here's some from the day it happened. There we go. Ryan constantly snapping pictures. My brother and his boyfriend. So this is one of my favorites. It just shows us having a good time. Pat's enjoying himself. Everybody's smiling. And then turn into a nightmare that quick.
Jeff and Ryan are driving.
I think I worked till 2 that day. Patrick had texted me.
Well, there's no rain. If you're still down, I'll meet you there.
We had talked about it earlier in the week about going to the river. St. Louis, that's what we do when it's hot. Go to the closest watering hole.
He said, all right, I'm down here waiting for you. I asked him if I needed to bring anything. He's like, no, bring yourself.
Jeff and Ryan sitting by the water.
It's my first time back since it happened.
The flowing river.
This is basically the hangout spot where we was hanging out.
Us three were right here.
Drinking, dipping, pushing each other in, roughhousing, doing what guys do. Tall guy approached us. Didn't he say something about our beer cans or something?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
He said something.
We was going to pick him up.
Yeah, he said something
which
about
we
our beer cans.
We were still here, so we was going to pick him up when we left, of course. But that was the first time he approached us, and we told him to mind his own business. And
we just basically let him know, hey, when we leave, we'll pick up our trash. You don't got to worry about that. And that's when he was, like, kept coming, like, just looking for reasons to start something. Like, who would approach three males who's been drinking by himself? I could tell he was looking for trouble.
Kovac in the interview room. It's 7:56 p.m.
Basically, after the second time he approached us, that's when we came to the conclusion that it was time for us to leave.
He asked if we had a problem.
Yeah, he was real insistent on if we had a problem. And like I said, I was the more sober, and I was like, look, dude, no, we don't got a problem. And honestly, I was just, my brother and Pat, they was drunk, so I was just trying to get them out of here, because I knew if he kept stirring shit, there was going to be a problem. Words was exchanged. People started getting mad, and I guess his wife approached and kind of calmed him down and got him back in his vehicle. He drove past, somebody said something, and when I looked up, the truck was up farther, and Pat was back here. Basically, he just leaned out of the window and...
Ryan mimics the gun. A photo of blood on the ground.
I mean, he was in a full-size SUV. There was a clear path, road ahead of him. All he had to do was hit the gas. If he feared for his life, like he says, I mean, he could have just drove off.
Wearing a backpack, Jeff walks into the interview room. The man asks, who brought the alcohol? Trouble.
Who brought the alcohol?
Trouble.
Who would you say is Trouble?
My bad. That's his nickname.
Patrick. Patrick, his nickname is Trouble? Well, how did he get that? Causing trouble?
No.
Trouble seemed to follow him?
The three guys were obviously drunk. And if you look, like, where the dirt's at, they had thrown beer cans and stuff there.
Lots of beer cans.
Lots of beer cans.
It was getting loud, and I didn't want to be around anymore.
Gabby and John, eyewitnesses.
There was a dad and a mom, and the kids and all were running around and playing and stuff. The dad had come over and introduced himself. He had served in the military, whether it was the beer cans or the cussing, because he did make a comment, you know, my kids are here. Come on, you know, I got my kids here.
Over and over again.
Over and over again.
They kept screaming and pushing him around, it seemed.
Belligerent.
Seemed like he was just trying to get out of here and make sure his wife went with him. The three guys that were harassing him followed him the whole time, and he kept saying, I got a gun, leave me alone, I got a gun. And they were beating on his truck. And I could hear this, I couldn't see it. And they were beating on his truck. He said he had a gun at least three times. And then all of a sudden you heard the shots.
A forensic photo of a bullet.
As I told the officers that night, I don't know what my response would have been, you know, if my children, if I felt like my children were being threatened, and I don't know. I don't know what the mother lion would do.
A forensic photo of blood on rocky ground. Gabby and John walk on. Ryan and Jeff are by the water. Kovacs in the interview room. Later, a woman's led in separately.
This is Detective Johnson. I'm out with Summer Kovac in reference to the shooting at Rockford Beach. You were married to Michael Kovac, correct?
Yes.
What I'm going to ask you about is the gun in question that Michael had. When did he pick up the gun?
Bought it Friday, mad at me.
He bought it Friday, mad at you? And why was he mad at you?
Because I told him I didn't know if I could do this anymore.
Okay, so he bought the gun to intimidate you, or?
He's told me in the past that I won't be anybody else's till death do us part.
Till death do us part.
He knew I was done. He knew I was leaving. In my heart, I feel like he kind of used that as an opportunity to take his anger out on him.
Kovac says he goes, "Go ahead and shoot me, motherfucker." He's asked, "So why don't you drive away?" Kovac looks at a loss.
He started coming at me. He came at me with his fist clenched.
But we didn't drive away.
He's getting right. I was in park. There was nothing I could do at that point.
But you got time to pick up a gun.
Okay.
Point it and squeeze the trigger, but you don't have time to put it down and drive away.
Because he was right there at my window. I already pulled the pistol out. I said, get back right now. Get back, man.
Obviously, he didn't listen to you. We get that. He did not listen
obviously.
To you. We get that.
Obviously.
All right? Yes, and I do believe that you've said those things. But what I'm touching on is we introduce a gun into an environment that the gun really need to be introduced into. And that's what we need to understand here. Is there other options that we could have took?
I don't feel there was. I didn't want to do it.
Then why'd you shoot him?
I just told you why, because the man was at my window.
But you keep telling me I didn't want to shoot the guy, but then you shoot him.
You're trying to contort my words.
How is that contort?
That's not how it happened.
I mean, I honestly, in my own opinion, and this is why me and him aren't together right now, they were all in the wrong. They were all mentally not stable at the time, and that none of them were thinking properly, because they all three could have made different decisions and it all would have ended differently.
I didn't want to do it. I really didn't. Is he alive still? Is he okay? He's not alive. Oh my God. Oh Oh my God. Parsons, forgive me. Oh my God. I never wanted to do that again.
I'm gonna give you a second.
He actually bought the gun the night before. He bought it on a Friday. And Saturday, he killed my best friend.
Jeff, Patrick's ID. A plastic box full of empty beer cans on a pickup truck.
Detectives investigating 13 shootings this weekend, three of them deadly.
Detectives arrested a 20-year-old man, charging him with firing at officers who were responding to a large disturbance and gunfire inside the Tyler apartment.
A map recording locations of incidents. It's dusk in Huntsville, Alabama, 10:46 p.m.
I mean, I don't like to talk about my past because, you know, I still, you know what I'm saying? I just don't want to talk about that type of stuff. Like, I was one of these reckless guys shooting people and all that stuff, you know what I'm saying? Well, we about to go. Like, I got attempted murder up here, you know what I'm saying? And that was my first attempted murder charge. But it's time for me to mature, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's only so long you can do dirt, you know what I'm saying, before it kicks back up with you.
Marcus. Someone's spinning a back wheel, then speeding off on a motorbike.
Yeah, got some game from my dad.
Young women doing their makeup.
We was hoping to have a good night because we was bored. I'm not trying to find nobody else to be. It was King of the Hill weekend. Like a biker's party. It was planning to go where everybody else was at.
Alexis.
Rika, she's my sister. And Diamond, she's my sister's best friend. We go out like every weekend.
A boy drinking from a bottle.
My mom was watching my kids that night. I have four boys.
Rika asks, who can we chill with?
Rika got on my Facebook page and she wrote Marcus. That night was the first night she met him.
11 p.m. and they're getting into a vehicle.
I'm almost there. Yeah, Yucks outside, mate. Google me. I ain't got no Google, no Facebook. Hey, look me up, though. Yucks outside the river. You already know.
Marcus is goofy.
We in team, yo.
Marcus driving.
And is you gonna ride or you gonna tell another lie?
It was Marcus, Fred, and Kanez in the car. I'm sitting next to Kanez, and he was cute, real fine.
Kanez, Rashad Morris was my little cousin. He was a good guy, you know what I'm saying? He's probably the best guy that I know. I know he's the best out of the family. The sharpest dresser that I know, he's a guy that he brought New Balances back in the style. You know how New Balances look now. He had them things, you know what I'm saying?
It was crazy. We was on 10 all night.
Stationary, Marcus makes eye contact with the driver next to him. He smiles while the passengers in the back laugh.
Everybody party, and then they'll go to the strip club afterwards.
A woman pole dancing at the Cherry.
Just pure insanity out here.
This is the spot right here where we at. My brother was like, hey man, that car following us. I'm like, bro, ain't nobody following us. You know what I'm saying? You tripping, bro. Ain't nobody following us. You paranoid. That's what I said. You paranoid. I just brushed it off.
It's loud. We by the music, so we can't hear it. They were saying that they think somebody was following us, but we ain't hear it the whole time.
I start hitting like 100 because he says the car was following us. So I just hit it down this road. And I left that car way behind. But we were stuck at that light so long that they caught up to us. I mean, I seen them when they started shooting. Like, I was looking in the rear view. So I was like, duh. He hung out the window. Like, I seen him. He hung his whole body out. That's when I was like, duh. And then, bah, 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 bah.
Alexis on the back seat.
Felt like I was being tased. It's like somebody set me on fire. We pulled up to the gas station. When I got out the car, I didn't feel it in my leg. I got shot twice. I got shot in my leg and my lung. I can't even explain it. I was so scared. I cannot explain it. I tried to talk, but I barely couldn't. I don't know. I thought I was going to lose my life.
Oh, 911. Hello.
Sir, I can't hear what you're saying for all the noise in the background.
They shot us. They shot the car. Can y'all pull up?
But I walked around to my cousin's side. And I shook him. I'm like, wake up. Wake up. I'm trying to shake him, you know what I'm saying? Wake up, wake up. And I could see like white foam out his head, and that's from where the bullet went through the seat. The cushion from the seat was like stuck in the back of his head.
My cousin been shot. Now,
listen. Are you with him right now?
I can't talk calm with you. Yes, he's right here. Yes, he's right here.
Are you all in the car?
Yes, come on. The son of God.
Sir.
CCTV footage of an officer putting up tape to seal off the area.
Within the past 40 minutes, we've learned the male victim in an early morning shooting in Huntsville is dead. A female victim remains in the hospital with life-threatening injuries.
4:10 a.m.
It was terrifying. By the time I got in there, she was in ICU. She had been shot twice. It was hard. It was really hard. I've never had to go through that with any of my kids. I didn't know if I was going to have to bury her or what.
Tina.
When I came out of surgery, they had brought my mom and my dad in the room. That was the first person that I seen. And they came back there, and I just busted out in tears because I never think I'd see my mama again. I was just so blessed to see her alive. We saw the parents of the young man that got killed, Cornelius' parents. And they got the word that he had passed. It just broke my heart.
Can we do the rest of this tomorrow?
Alexis, with her head bowed. A photograph of Cornelius. It's morning, and a man is driving.
I just don't expect my kids or nobody's kids to die like that.
Ray, Cornelius's father.
This is where Cornelius got killed at, for real. You know, they can say he died at the hospital, but I don't think so. I think when he got shot, he was dead.
Now Ray's walking.
A young generation, when they get mad, the first thing they'll grab a gun. Instead of doing like we did back in the old days, just knuckle it up. You be friends right when you get through. He's one of them sons, real special. Can I come over there and spend the night? He always got to have his feet on me or his hands on me. I'd be trying to push him out of bed. I catch myself even just dialing his number. Thinking he gonna pick up. But I just be dialing, just be dialing.
Ray's been visiting the roadside memorial to his 19-year-old son.
Two suspects in custody following this weekend's deadly shooting.
Police are tweeting that multiple people have been shot. No official word on fatalities right now.
The incidents on the map of the U.S.
You don't see murder on this kind of scale with this kind of frequency in any other advanced nation on Earth. Every country has violent, hateful, or mentally unstable people. What's different is not every country is awash with easily accessible guns.
Sunday, July 26th, 5:51 a.m. in Tucson, Arizona. Birds perching on a tree.
Temperatures in the 70s and 80s, so a warm start to the day, but even warmer as we get into the afternoon across the deserts here in Arizona.
A message reads, "I'm sorry. I ruined my life and hurt the only person I've truly loved. I can't go on anymore. Goodbye." A reply, "Whoa, Josh, what's up? Nothing is so bad. You'll get through this."
Tucson Police, Curtis.
I'm just trying to report a suicide threat.
I live in the Phoenix area, but I have a friend who's in the Tucson area, and he basically sent me a text that sounded like a suicide note.
What's the name and the telephone?
Joshua.
Yeah, do you have their address by any chance?
I don't, unfortunately.
Concerned text messages continue.
Tucson Police, Talgan.
Yes, I wanted to see if it's possible to get a well check done on my son. He's threatened suicide in the middle of the night. And his mom.
Where is he?
He's in Tucson.
Do you know where? What his address is?
It's 3052 North Algernon Way, and it's apartment 201. He has been suicidal before.
Okay.
The white apartment building. A bird in silhouette flies off. Lorraine's driving.
I woke up about an hour after he sent the text. And I was really nervous because I wasn't sure really what I was going to do when I got there. I just knew I had to go. I was shaking a lot. The way he's told me is that I've been one of his best friends. From early on, I knew that he had a lot of stuff going on. He had issues with his father. His mother at the time was the only vaguely stable influence in his life. And he didn't have a lot of good relationships. But I helped him out the best I could. I pull in, the police were already there.
Couldn't go up or anything, they told me to stay back. There was a police officer on the staircase, and then there was one on top, and they were trying to talk to Joshua and get him out and talk to him.
I felt sort of helpless, also relieved, because in my mind they're well-trained to de-escalate situations.
The landing outside the apartment. The driver of a pickup truck.
I came to the shop early, 6:30 Sunday morning. I noticed police across the street. I didn't think a whole lot of it. I parked my truck and I was walking up to unlock the shop and I heard the police yell, "Put down the knife." And at that time I turned around that, you know, something was getting ready to happen.
The driver leans on a vehicle. 7:08 a.m.
He eventually comes out and he has knives in his hands. He was walking to them like this, like a knife attacking position. And I was like, oh, he's doing this.
I saw one police officer down at the bottom of the stairs, and I saw one officer at the top of the stairs. And then, in less than a second, it seemed like they had shot. I saw both of them shoot.
He fell down, and I heard him saying, "Thank you for killing me." I realized that he did it on purpose.
Images of a large area of blood and a bullet on the landing.
I know you feel it. The threats are all around us. Politicians aren't there to protect you. Laws can't protect you. You're on your own. But you know what can protect you? When no one else can? The ironclad, absolute safeguard of the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms.
Gun range near St. Louis, Missouri.
This is my everyday carry weapon. This is a Glock 19. It's small, it's concealable, holds 15 rounds plus one in the chamber. If I'm going down to the corner store to get gas, probably not a big deal. I'm going to take that guy. If we're going, we know there's riots out or there's a potential for something like that happening, probably taking more than a pistol. I'll probably take a rifle or something else with me and spare magazines in case. This guy here is one of my favorites. One of the good things about this one is it folds down really small with that short barrel. When you take the suppressor off it, if you're wearing a long coat or something, you could potentially put that underneath to hide it. And that little area there is where you want to hit. That's where all the vital organs are. I'm not going to feel like a victim in my own city. If I needed to defend myself or my family, at least I have some practice or skill set that I can do that with. Maybe it'll never happen. Maybe I'll never need a spare tire on my car, but I keep one in the trunk anyway.
It's a popular park this time of year. Rockford Beach sits along the Big River in Jefferson County. Investigators say it was near dusk Saturday when a verbal argument escalated into gunfire.
I was down at the Lake of the Ozarks.
The fishers tackle. It's 8 a.m.
I'd got a message on my phone. We get bad reception there, so I have to go up on the hill to get my messages. And I went up on the hill and turned my phone on, and Patrick's girlfriend said, "Mike, please call me." I could tell in her voice something was really wrong. And I called her, and she told me that Pat had been killed.
Mike, Patrick's father.
I had crazy emotions. My mind was kind of scrambled, you know, with grief. I didn't know what to think because I really didn't know what happened. I guess I still don't.
Mike's driving.
If he would have had a weapon in his hand or something, I could almost live with it. But knowing that he had no weapon whatsoever in his hand is what bothers me so bad.
Investigators say the victim was shot more than once in the chest. The weapon was a semi-automatic handgun.
The shooter is telling us that he felt that he was in fear of his safety at the time.
Well, being raised Catholic, I was supposed to try to forgive him. And I've tried. But I had a really bad temper as a child, and it really flared up there for a while, and I almost did something really stupid, but I have the rest of my family to think about, so I don't plan on taking matters into my own hands, although it could be really easy for me to do. That man intervened where he shouldn't have intervened. At least that's the picture I'm seeing. He was taken from me.
Mike's holding a photo of Patrick by the water.
He wanted to run the company that I have. We have a small maintenance business, but he was doing well. He was my foreman. He'd always make comments about, "Dad, as soon as you retire, I'm gonna, you know, run the show." You know, I'm supposed to be the head of the household, the man, the backbone or strength, and I am.
But they see that, you know, that hurt me, scarred me, made me a little bit bitter. So I catch myself snapping a little bit quicker than I normally would. I miss my Patrick.
He composes himself.
Yep, miss him bad.
Mike sitting on a porch.
Jefferson County investigators initially took the suspect into custody on a voluntary manslaughter charge, but prosecutors declined to file charges.
The suspect's been released.
I'd love to see it, the case be reopened and justice be done for my son.
If you make a bad decision and you take somebody's life, you need to suffer the consequences. And while I got a gun to protect my family, if I did that wrongfully, I would expect to get the same treatment. And so that's what we're really going for. We're going for justice.
Matthew Singer, Patrick's family attorney.
String of shootings that left 11 people injured and one dead over the weekend. 18-year-old girl and two young boys were also shot.
Highs of 73 at the coast today. We do have high surf and strong rip currents, so please be careful at the beaches. We're going to see that cloud cover linger.
Oceanside, California.
It was a warm day, right? I had goals and I had dreams. Being in a prison wasn't one of them. Now, I had a gun in my backpack. You know what I mean? A pretty big pistol, a Colt. It was a 45. I was on the run.
A level crossing. Heather, Julius's mother.
Well, Julius is hard to explain in one word. Julius is, God, an intense, really smart kid. Julius is bipolar and manic disorder. So sometimes he's on a low, sometimes he's on a high. Sometimes he'll be totally normal. But then when he's on that low, he just loses it. When he turned 18, I was like, oh no, now if he gets into trouble, now it's, you're gonna go to jail. Once he was high on weed, because he was, you know, misbehaving, and he was passed out on the couch and I saw a bag laying on the ground. I'm like, I don't know where this came from. So I looked in and there was a gun in there. I'm like, where in the world did you get that thing? It was from my friend. And then once again, in down here in Oceanside, he went to another friend's house. He goes, Mom, can you give them their gun back? Absolutely not. I'm not touching this. I don't want this in my car. And I go, where'd you get this? Once again, from a friend on the streets. It's heart-wrenching and worrisome. Whenever the phone rings, you don't want it to be that call. Always, please don't let it be about Julius.
My name is Julius Lowe. Some may know me as Vegas.
Some may know me as Vegas. I'm a big brother to a lot of people. An enemy to some, a friend to others. I'm just another human being.
I was in Oceanside from July 5th up until the 26th. And I was down there to see my friend Jordan. Jordan, my best friend. He's my little shadow. You know, we both like to surf, and you know what I mean? He's a little pretty boy, you know what I mean? And I was the same way. We just hung out. I made reggae music, and he loves reggae music. That was my little man.
Photos of the teenagers. Palm trees and residences. Deanne, neighbor.
My husband and I live about four apartments over from where Jordan lived. I know another young man, Calvin, who lived with them. Calvin and Jordan, who had been in foster care, and then at 18, their foster care program ends, and they were in an after foster care program to try to help them become adults. Our neighbor upstairs had told us that Jordan and Calvin were not getting along at all. The first time I encountered Calvin, I was coming home from work, and I saw this young man knocking on doors. And I thought, oh, he must be selling something. But then he came to our door, and he asked if I knew how to sew, and if I could sew these patches on his shirts for work. And it broke my heart. It didn't feel that they had enough support. Calvin didn't even know how to operate a washing machine or a dryer. He may have been a grown man, but he's a baby.
Calvin is a very antisocial person. He was punking Jordan, kicking his friends out of the house, disrespecting his girlfriends. Jordan would walk by. Calvin would use his hand to make a gun, pointed at the head like he was shooting. A few days before, he racked a pistol in his room. The way he pulled that slide back on the gun let us know that he was trying to intimidate us.
I immediately shut it down. Now, I don't know if you want me to talk about the whole, you know, cowboy and Indian draw we had, stand-up that we had in the house, but all I was trying to get him to understand was there's always somebody bigger than you.
2 p.m.
My husband and I were just getting ready to go to the pool. We heard loud, loud voices, and then we heard a few pops. Somebody screamed, "Oh my God, he shot him." As I came running up, Jordan was lying right here. Very shocking thing to see in person, the sights, the sound, the smell. Jordan had a bullet wound right through, at least it appeared to me, right through to his neck. His eyes were open, his pupils were not moving. There was no pulse. It was quite evident that there wasn't anything that I could do for this man.
Police say Calvin Glass has shot two people in Oceanside, killing one of them.
He's just sitting on the floor with blood all over his chest, and I'm seeing the trail of blood from the apartment to outside to his body.
I told them my baby's life was in danger. That's what I told them.
Deanne.
I had no idea it was Calvin who had fired. Once I found out, it was just even more heartbreaking. Julius was standing right about here. He had been shot, and I did see blood, but he was very animated. He was very worried. I heard something about guns. I don't know how many guns were in the apartment, but apparently there was more than one, and Julius was trying to make sure that they weren't there, because obviously the police were coming.
When the bullet hit me under my chin, it curved right out. And I didn't feel a thing. The first thing that happened was a split second of panic. Then I heard my subconscious tell me, if you panic, you're gonna die. By the time I went outside, I see Jordan on the floor, and he's bleeding. And a couple of people come outside. Two elderly, beautiful, wonderful people. I thank God for these people. The man told me, "Son, listen, if you don't put that gun down, when the cops get here, they're going to kill you."
Heather's driving.
The hospital called me. Julius has been shot. I think guilt went through my mind, because I knew, obviously, I didn't hear from him. I should have known or had some type of motherly instinct that something happened to him. So that was the initial reaction. Why didn't I not know something happened to my own kid? When we got there, he was, you know, like full of tubes and coming from everywhere. He's black and blue all throughout his neck. But it was bad, because you have a hole. He has the trach, the big hole in his neck. And the poor kid couldn't talk. He's just crying. And
just writing things down, and that was hardest for me. It's not good. You're like, why do they have to go through this? You know, if you feel like I had a normal growing up and didn't have to go through that, why does he have to go through this? But then you're like, well, I'm grateful he's alive, because look at Jordan. The child didn't make it.
A photo of a shirtless Jordan wearing a baseball cap back to front.
How does the argument that kids would have fought, I got into a fist fight over years ago, now escalate into, I'm going to kill you because I'm not getting along with you? That's beyond me.
A bird in flight.
It gives them a false sense of security. Julius feels empowered when he has the gun. He feels, okay, I'm strong, I'm empowered, I have this. So those people that are going to come to hurt me, they can't hurt me. I'm going to hurt them first because I have this gun.
Heather's by the sea.
Police say Glass tried to flee but was caught at the Escondido Transit Center. Glass is in Vista Jail for facing murder and attempted murder charges.
Footage from court.
We've lost a beautiful boy, Jordan, and we've lost a beautiful boy, Calvin. Calvin is now going to spend the rest of his life in prison, where they're going to teach him how to be a thug. I'm sorry, I keep calling them boys, but in my mind, they were just boys.
Deanne, a surfer, is wiped out by a wave. Flying over fields and farms, Newton, North Carolina.
I'm in trouble, I'm an addict, I'm addicted to this girl. She's got my heart tied in a knot and my stomach in a whirl. But even worse, I can't stop calling her. She's all I want and more. I mean, damn, what's not to adore? I've been playing.
So anything I say in this video is not to offend anybody with colored skin or Jewish or even people with disabilities, because it's just me being retarded, okay? Oh, not that, no wait, not that word. Me being thingy.
Selena, okay, making a video.
Hey, how you doing? You doing good? I heard you and your boy broke up last night. Does that mean I can... Yeah.
My name's Chantel. Let me tell you, girlfriend. You look at my boy like that one more time and I'm gonna knock that weed right off your head.
Selena smiles. A pickup pulls out onto a long road. A vehicle outside a white painted farmhouse.
Is she out of my...
Me and Selena's back at my mom's. We've been to a party. It was crazy. Everybody's getting in fights and stuff at the party, and a lot of drugs and drinking.
Chris.
Here, people like to drink and do drugs. Like everybody I know does. I guess that's the only thing they got to do. I know Selena because I met her on Facebook back in 2013. We started chatting and became friends. She was a wild one.
You wanna get in the back of my ice cream truck? I got all the flavors. Strawberry, chocolate, vanilla. I even got that chocolate syrup. Yes, I do.
Kitty, Chris's mother.
Chris had been gone for a couple of days. You know, him and Selena were together, and that they had went to a party. There was a pretty good age difference there that I wasn't happy about. Selena was 16, Chris was 20. But they were cute together. She didn't want to be like anybody else, and he's like that too. She wanted to be who she was, her own little style, and she was a leader, not a follower. And I think Chris and her connected on many levels.
A photo of them together.
She came in the house and I let her take a shower and I gave her some new clothes to wear and fed her. And I told Selena to call her mama. because I knew the story behind where Selena was supposed to be and where she wasn't, you know, she was obviously wasn't where she was supposed to be. They were in good shape when they left. I mean, I made sure they were. I fed them and, you know, made sure they were good to go.
A video of Selena and a younger girl singing in the back seat. Haley, Selena's sister.
She's actually really funny to hang out with. Even though she dead-legged me a lot. That really hurts. Haley, change those shoes. They're horrible. Brush your hair more. I'm like, I just brushed it 2 seconds ago. Brush it again. Wear makeup. I'm like, no, I'm good. I don't like makeup. Too bad.
The sister singing in the car. Selena rubbing cream on her face. Today, Haley's on a swing.
I know she called my mom and said, can I stay the night at I don't know whose house anymore. I can't remember. And she said, yeah, but you have to be home in the morning. I know she was with her friend Chris.
2:10 p.m. Chris.
CJ came and picked us up. CJ was my best friend. Went to Walmart. And we hung out there for a little bit. And we went to his mom's work. CJ went in. Me and Selena stayed outside. When he came back out, he said his friend had a gun for sale. CJ wanted to sell it to make some money so we could get some drugs. I told him it wasn't a good idea. I felt like if we got caught with it, then I was going to jail for a long time. And I wasn't driving, he did, he was. And he said it would be all right. CJ is my best friend, and I've known him since sixth grade. He's a really good person. CJ's a really good person.
And how much did Selena know about that?
She knew everything. She actually said she had somebody that wanted to buy it, the rifle. None of us had money, so we had an opportunity to make money to go get high. So that's the excitement that we had. We was going to go get high.
4:45 p.m.
When we get to the house, CJ backs in beside the truck that the rifle was in, and we get out. He goes up to the truck and takes the rifle out and looks at it. He takes the clip out of the back, and he puts it in the rifle, racks it back, turns around, and shoots it through the woods. Takes the clip out, sits it down, and he poses for the picture that Selena was going to take before she could send it to somebody to sell.
Chris poses.
Well, after she took the picture, he was pointing it around, you know, looking through the sight. Selena didn't have any time to react. I didn't either, because it happened in seconds. It happened 2 seconds after she took the picture. You know, he posed for it, took the picture, and he was pointing it around, and it went off.
A large truck on the road.
It just took me a minute to register what happened, and I walked around to her front and looked and seen the bullet hole and the blood coming out. I said, oh my God, you shot her, dude. And about that time, she started screaming. And she dropped to her knees and started puking up blood. And I picked her up, and she walked about 5 steps and fell down and hit her head on the pavement. And I bent down and started holding her. And as soon as it happened, he called 911 and was on the phone with them the whole time until they got there.
Kitty.
I got the phone call. I got in my car, and I was about 100 miles an hour all the way to the scene. I could see them putting Selena in the ambulance, and I heard her call Chris's name, and she told Chris to come in with her, and they wouldn't let him. They shut the door, and then you could see the helicopter come. I seen it come, but then I seen it turn around and leave, and that was my first clue that something was wrong.
the helicopter flying further and further away over woodland. A reporter at the scene.
Well, that shooting happened right over there next to that black pickup truck. Two men and the 16-year-old had come to the home to look at a rifle for sale when she was accidentally shot. Take a look at this video. This morning, deputies showed us the Ruger 10/22 that they seized after the shooting along Rocky Ford Road. It was stored in the back of the pickup truck. If you look closely, you can see the clip was not in the rifle at the time, but investigators say there was still a single round in the weapon. Deputies say 16-year-old Selena.
CJ.
I have a death on my conscience of a girl that I never met, first time meeting her, and I accidentally shouldn't kill her. Selena had the phone, you know. I was holding the gun like this. She was taking pictures of it, and it was after the fact. That's where the papers got it wrong. They said the gun went off while we were taking pictures. That's not true. She already took the pictures, and I guess she was sending the pictures to somebody. Her and Chris was talking off to the side. And that's when I was still looking at the gun, inspecting it, make sure everything was right about it. Yeah, and that's when it went off. I didn't even hear it pop.
What do you like with guns?
I was growing up in a house that didn't have no guns. My parents didn't believe in us playing with toy guns and stuff. I didn't have really much education on them. I know not to point them at people.
You know, if you could turn back time, what do you wish you could have done?
I wish I would have checked the chamber and seen if there was a live round in it. Wish I could have changed that. I have dreams about it. I see her face quite often.
So we sat down to eat dinner, me, Haley, and her daddy, and that's when the cops knocked on the door. They showed me a picture of Selena they'd gotten off the internet and asked me, was this my daughter? My response was, yeah, what did she do? Thinking she'd gotten in trouble. And, of course, they said there's been an accident, and after that, I don't remember a whole lot, you know. From what I've been told, I covered my ears and tried to run away.
Kelly, Selena's mother.
They took me in to see her. That's not how you want to see your child. I seen her for a minute, but I left. That's not how I wanted to see my daughter. I told myself I wasn't going to break down. I used to be that hard person. I used to be able to do that. You know, Selena would brag that to everybody because, you know, my mom is the toughest person I know. You know, I've never seen her cry. You know, she don't put up with no crap. I'm not that person anymore. You know, half of me's gone. I have Haley, so I have to be okay.
Haley sorting through makeup brushes and other bits and pieces. An aerial view of the remote house in the trees.
Sadly, the American dream is dead. And we have to take care of the Second Amendment. We have to take care. It's being whittled away. They want to whittle. We've got to protect our Second Amendment, and we've got to, very important, let's get rid of these gun-free zones.
Deputies say it all started with a road rage incident.
Two males suffering from gunshot wounds. It looks to be a robbery gone wrong.
A water tower high above verdant woodland, nearby train lines. Red lights flashing on a level crossing. Seneca, South Carolina. a young man riding a dirt bike along a road.
I am totally for guns. I have 10 guns or more. I have lots of weapons. That's not the problem. The people holding the weapons are the problem. I love shooting. I like deer hunting. I like turkey hunting. Definitely euphoric. You feel power when you shoot a gun. That's the thing. That's what makes people crazy with weapons, is you feel power. You have that power in your hands, just what you feel like you can stop anything.
He rides on. It's 8:16 p.m. A narcotic sting operation is underway in the parking lot of Hardee's restaurant. The exterior of the restaurant. It's 8:26 p.m. Lieutenant Tiller responds to a call for backup. This is the audio recorded by his vehicle's dash cam. Stop, stop, stop. I will shoot your fucking ass. He tried to hit me. Stop him. He's shot. He's already had shots fired.
Put your hands in the air.
Stop me.
Put your hands in the air.
Stop me.
I shot him. No, he tried to hit me with a car. I shot him.
Officer-involved shootings in Oconee County, they're very rare. This is my third or fourth in my 24-year career. It took me probably, 15 to 20 minutes to arrive on scene. I was unsure who was involved. I was aware that no police officer was injured, which was a relief. The victim died at the scene. In this case, the victim died at the hands of another individual. And the manner of death is going to be classified as a homicide. It's not up to the coroner to determine if it's justified or not. I was told that the young man was attempting to drive off when the officer fired at the vehicle.
Carl Addis, coroner. A quote, "My first shot was fired when I had pushed myself off the car. If not for my quick reflexes, I felt I would have been run over and killed." Lieutenant Mark R. Tiller.
The female that was accompanying the victim just knew his name was Zach.
A photograph of Zach. The young man on his bike. The sun sparkling through spindly trees.
I've known Zach almost all my life, since kindergarten. I just used to watch him ride his dirt bike like, whoa, that's pretty cool. Now, obviously, I have a huge dirt bike, but he kind of planted a seed.
Gage, Zach's friend.
He's always a good person to hang out with. Always something to do, always some fun to be had. Mischief to be made. His last few months, or years, were just kind of him figuring out who he was, which is for everybody. When you're a young person, you live and learn, you do stupid stuff.
What about drugs?
As every teenager probably nowadays, a little bit of weed smoking. Cigarettes, I hate cigarettes. That's a drug to me. I don't know what else he got into. He wouldn't tell you everything.
The sun setting in the distance beyond a river crossing. It's 10 p.m.
We were on our way to bed when the doorbell rang. I was already in my pajamas, you know. Coroner told us that Zach had run over or tried to run over a police officer. I just fell, to my knees in disbelief. He was my rambunctious little boy. My dad used to call Dennis the Menace, if that tells you anything. Didn't make sense to me. But I was brought up to believe what the authorities tell you. So I believed it.
Angie, Zach's mother. A man driving at night.
My name is James Burgess, but I go by Buddy Burgess. Everybody calls me Buddy.
Private investigator.
Things just wasn't adding up. Number one, there was no drug buy that was made. There never was a buy. There was very little marijuana in the vehicle. There was no weapon in the vehicle. When I worked narcotics, we never arrested on the first buy. We tried to make more buys, and we would just step up the line till we got as far as we could go, and then you go back and arrest everybody. Why call in an officer when you haven't even made a buy? And if there's no threat, then why come in the way Officer Tiller came in? There's a lot of questions that needs to be answered, a lot of them.
The roadside restaurant all lit up.
Two Tucson police officers shot an armed man this morning in Midtown. It all happened at an apartment complex near Alvernon and Fort Lowell just before 7 this morning.
So Tucson police say both officers opened fire and the man was struck multiple times.
At night, a man heading up to the landing.
I knew Josh had had that kind of a history with being depressed, but I didn't think it would come to the point where the cops would come and shoot him.
He's made it along the landing to the front door.
So the first thing I saw when I came home were bullet holes in this window here, as well as a bullet hole in this door.
Glenn, Josh's roommate.
And then I came in the house. See, the plaster here had been shot up as well. I'm assuming it was the bullet that came through that window. And so that was all shattered, and the place was really a mess. There were dirty dishes over there, and all his books and everything were on the floor. I don't know, it felt kind of like a horror movie, I guess you could say. not to mention the smell was just in your face. The worst part was when I came to the bathroom. The sink had blood all over it, and the bathtub as well. There was quite a bit of it, and looking at that made me a little nauseous. You know, I felt a little bit responsible. I felt like I should have been there for him, but I wasn't. So I feel like if I was here, I could have prevented something.
The exterior of the building.
Right after I was shot, I dropped to my knees and I said, "Thank you for killing me." I'm laying there going, "I'm gonna die, I'm gonna die, this is it." And this voice, I assume it was in my head, but it sounded like someone was whispering in my ear, said, "You're not gonna die today."
A black and white image of a bearded man, Josh.
Looking back on my life, I've always been different. I've always felt like I stood apart.
I had been in a relationship with my fiance. We had been together for about 2.5 months. It was a good relationship. She really built me up and made me feel like I mattered and that I had purpose. That weekend, she was at her sister's wedding. I decided to go to get a couple sodas, and I get my sodas and I'm standing there in line, and this girl, probably 26, 27, starts talking to me. There's a little bit of flirting going on, and then she invites me back to her apartment to have sex. And I just say yes. We have sex, and then I go back to my apartment. my mood just starts to crash and I plunge into an abyss of sorrow and despair for what I've just done and decide I'm going to end my life. The first thing I did was I cut my wrists. I apparently am a very considerate person because I took a Tupperware into the bathtub to catch the blood so that they wouldn't have to clean up as much. I sat in the tub for probably 3, maybe 4 hours, just bleeding. It would keep clotting, so I knew that wasn't gonna work. So the police show up, and I see the first squad car pull in, and then I go, well, crap. I can't be here anymore. I have to be gone. I start rummaging around the apartment, trying to think of what I can do. I grab the 2 kitchen knives that I ultimately held in my hands, and then they were pounding on my door. I told them to leave. I didn't, and I wouldn't talk to them, and they're like, well, you're coming out or we're coming in. One of them walks up to the door, and I saw him take his pistol out of his holster. And immediately, that registered in my mind is, there we go. That's how I'll end my life. They have guns. I have knives. This is America. They'll shoot me. I unlocked the door and stepped out.
A forensic image of a kitchen knife. 7:08 a.m.
He exited the apartment. He basically came out quickly. He had 2 knives in his clenched fists. His shirt was soaked in blood. And he said, now you can see that I'm serious. He starts coming at me quickly. And I started giving him verbal commands to put the knives down. I gave it several times.
You describe him as starting to quickly come towards you?
Correct.
And what action did you take?
I fired, I believe it was 3 shots.
Officer Zachary Bargout.
Tell me why, if you can explain to me why you chose to discharge your firearm as opposed to possibly engaging him with a taser or trying to retreat some.
I didn't really have anywhere to retreat. My back is to a waist-high railing.
So you had concerns about him possibly pushing you over?
Correct.
And what else?
Stabbing me. While he was on the ground, and we were rendering aid, he started saying, thank you.
And I go, you guys are lousy excuses for marksmen. It's 2 to the head, 1 to the chance. Where did you learn how to shoot?
The apartment's landing. The bleak landscape and the river crossing.
South Carolina police lieutenant won't face charges after he shot and killed unarmed 19-year-old Zachary Hammond in the parking lot of Hardee's. Lieutenant Mark Tiller claims that he acted in self-defense.
I had to see Zach. It just didn't seem real to me until I saw him, you know? And that was the hardest thing I think I've ever had to do. So we found out that day that Zach had not been shot in the front, in the chest. He had actually been shot from behind. Then our minds just started swirling like, what's going on here? The police said that Zach had tried to run the officer over and that he was shot in the chest. But then if that happened, how did he get shot in the back? And that's when we really started thinking something's not right here.
Eric Bland, attorney.
We started demanding information from the police.
The narrative that was being advanced was that Lieutenant Tiller was a hero, that he himself was a victim of attempted murder, and that he had no other option but to use excessive and deadly force to get himself out of trouble. That was not the case.
3:16 p.m. An aerial view of the sprawling city.
They claim that Zachary was a dangerous teenager, although they had no evidence of that. They didn't know that Zachary was going to be there in the Hardee's parking lot. All they knew that it was going to be was Tori Morton. Zachary was with Tori Morton. They had been on a couple dates before in a friendly fashion, and this was really their first romantic date. Tori wants to stop at McDonald's, and she buys a vanilla ice cream cone. Maybe it was chocolate dipped, we don't know, but a vanilla ice cream cone. A text was sent from Tori Morton's phone. She is going to sell marijuana. The text, though, according to the authorities, is that the number was off and went to a highway patrolman. The highway patrolman then notified the local Seneca police authorities and said, there's a drug transaction that is going to go down. As a result, a sting operation is set up without a lot of pre-planning, without positioning the proper officers, without getting authority from the proper chain. And it's determined that BJ McCoy is going to dress as an undercover officer, park in the rear of the Hardee's in a truck. And that's where this supposed drug transaction is going to take place.
A text reads, I'm in the back. Where are you at? The reply, I think I'm beside you. Lol. 8:26 p.m.
We don't know why, but the drug transaction never takes place. The undercover officer exits his truck and starts to walk towards Tori Morton's side of the car. And at that point, Officer Mark Tiller is coming at a high rate of speed through down the entrance.
Dash cam footage from Lieutenant Tiller's car. He speeds to the rear of the restaurant. He jumps out, then goes to the car with his gun pointing at the driver. Zach's car drives off.
He tried to hit me. Stop him! He's shot! Get on the radio, shot, fire!
Put your hands in the air!
Shot, fire!
Put your hands in the air!
Shot, fire!
Stop
him. I shot him.
Get out.
No, he tried to hit me with his car.
Taking him out.
I shot him.
Get out on the ground.
Lieutenant Tiller's life was never in danger. Zachary Hammond never had the intent to conduct a criminal act against Lieutenant Tiller. He was just a kid that wanted to get away, to drive away. And Lieutenant Tiller put himself in danger and then used excessive force to get himself out of danger. Lieutenant Tiller approaches the vehicle in a very reckless fashion towards the front of the vehicle, but never got in front of the vehicle so that he was in danger of being hit. More importantly, at the time he makes the conscious decision, I'm going to discharge my weapon, 3/4 of Zachary's car has already passed him. So unless a hurricane comes or a tornado that's going to flip Zachary's car sideways, Lieutenant Tiller is no longer in any danger, if he ever was, of being hit with a car. And the law says if you have that split second to make that decision that I'm no longer in danger, then you must not use your weapon. When you have the right to come in with a gun as an officer, it escalates quickly. It's already at the point where the next action is to discharge your weapon. It's very difficult to de-escalate force once force and guns are drawn.
The dash cam footage.
You need to know, and the public needs to know, that this officer 2 years before has said to another witness in a police training session that before I leave, I will shoot somebody.
A photo of Tiller.
Unfortunately, what ended up happening is that a 19-year-old unarmed teenager lost his life to the actions of an overzealous police officer who wrongfully approached the car in a paramilitary outfit saying, "I will shoot your fucking ass," and a 19-year-old scared kid hit the gas to try to leave.
The aftermath of the shooting. Someone says he ain't breathing. Tiller says, "You're gonna get fucked up. I'm up in the area." An image of Zach's covered body on the ground. Now a boy in the bath.
Take that ball out of your mouth. Say, can you say
dooby dooby?
Take your ball out and say it. Take the ball out of your mouth. Now say it.
Dooby dooby.
Say it real good.
Dooby dooby.
Young Zach with his mother.
You know, I know that, you know, Zach shouldn't have been there that night. But I also know that he shouldn't have been killed. And I believe that somehow justice is going to come.
One more time.
A vast mountain landscape. Angie's with a group of people overlooking the view. Soon she's handing out pens so that the people can write messages on their balloons. One message starts, "Dear Zach, I miss you very much."
I chose this place because just right before Zach died, he came up here really early in the morning to watch the sunrise. I can't imagine what he saw that morning. He said it was beautiful and just really meant a lot to know that he came here.
The balloons are released. Jordan's killer Calvin is serving 21 years for voluntary manslaughter and attempted murder. Julius is serving time for attempted murder in an unrelated case. Cornelius's alleged killers were charged with murder, but the case was dropped due to lack of probable cause. Alexis was left with $50,000 in medical bills. The man who shot Selena was convicted of involuntary manslaughter. At her mother's request, his sentence was reduced to probation. Zach's family settled a wrongful death lawsuit against the city of Seneca for $2.15 million.
This is a nation of dreams.
Lieutenant Tiller was dismissed. He faced no criminal charges. Patrick's killer was never charged. Prosecutors believed it was self-defense. Matthew Singer, the family's attorney, is hoping to bring a civil case. Josh was convicted of aggravated assault against the police officers who shot him. He is serving 6.5 years.
But the challenge I see with American reality, where we have such liberal access to weapons, what that has resulted in, I have seen it myself, is so many children taken, killed, murdered. How many of our children's dreams must be destroyed by gun violence before we do the common sense things to begin to shrink those numbers?
He appeared to be holding a weapon underneath a piece of paper, like a small handgun that was pointed upwards. And then within a few seconds, I heard two shots fired and I saw the gentleman go back into the planter box.
The clock ticks on to 12:01 a.m.
911, location of your emergency.
Amazing, 1402 and 1414 is on the scene. Units on scene. 209.